national phone number, area code 212-749-3311, or in the New York area, 866-5010. Night Call's host in New York City is Del Shields.
Good evening.
Hello?
We both fell down when they told us to, when the cops from the street approached us. They kicked us and cursed us for about 5 minutes while we were lying on the ground. Then the cops told us to get up and start running for the squad car. Bobby started running. He ran about 10 yards and they started shooting him. I heard about 12 shots. It was hard to tell for sure. He had his hands high in the air until he died. Those were the words of our guest tonight, Elridge Cleaver, describing the death of another member of the Black Panthers, Bobby Hutton, on the night of April 6th in Oakland, California. The official Oakland police version is considerably different. They claim they thought Hutton might have had a weapon, and that when police brought him to the front of the house, he broke and ran. The Oakland grand jury agreed with the police that they had acted lawfully in killing Hutton as he emerged from a house where several members of the Black Panthers had fled. Nobody can argue against the fact that on the night of April 6th, one Black Panther was killed. Two, including our guest tonight, were wounded, and six others were arrested following a 90-minute shootout in which two Oakland policemen were also wounded. Elridge Cleaver, the Minister of Information of the Black Panthers, is under indictment for assault to kill and is free on nominal bail while waiting trial. He has just written a book, Soul on Ice, which has been widely hailed by the New York Times, Time, and the Atlantic Monthly. And Cleaver himself has been called one of the best cultural critics of our time. Mr. Cleaver is also an ex-convict. He served 9 years on a criminal assault charge and an earlier term for possession of marijuana. We welcome your calls to him on the general subject of the Black Panthers and Black Power. You may call collect on our national telephone number, area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311 for national calls, and 866-5010 for calls from the New York area. Local calls again on 866-5010. Mr. Cleaver, good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you for being with us this evening.
My pleasure.
Just who and what are the Black Panthers?
The Black Panther Party is a political party that originated in Oakland, California, and was started by Huey P. Newton, who was the Minister of Defense of the party, and our chairman, Bobby Seale. The party seeks to organize black people in a fashion that they can move to take control of the life and the politics and the destiny of the black community. The thing that really makes the Black Panther Party stand out from other groups that originate in the black community is the fact that we feel it necessary to use guns in a defensive manner against the aggression, particularly by the police departments, vigilante groups, and so forth. Because we have used these guns for our defense, this is what most people have come to associate with the Black Panther Party. But this is only one point on our platform. We have a 10-point platform that outlines the basic grievances and the basic desires and needs of black people as we see them. And we seek to organize the people in the black community who have never been organized before, and that is the lower class, so-called lower class black people who are not candidates for membership in the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, etc. If we can, I would prefer to get into that through a process of question and answers. Can we?
Yes, we can. Since you have written the book called Soul on Ice, and the book has been widely hailed throughout the country, how do you resolve your relationship now, your position as Minister of Information? Hello.
Yes.
How do you resolve your position now as Minister of Information for the Black Panther Party and now as a social critic?
Well, I think that they two work very handily together because we're dealing with the same thing, you know. There's no conflict in my book between my politics and the book that tries to pass on information and my position in the party is concerned with passing on information and dealing with interpretations of what we're all involved in. And I see that they work very good together. As a matter of fact, the book itself has helped considerably in helping to get a lot of the program and activity of the Panther Party across, because it really deals with the same thing, but from another approach, that's all.
You mentioned earlier that the guns of the Black Panthers are to be used for defensive purposes.
Yes.
How do you resolve the fact, or I'd like for you to elaborate a moment on the fact that we had talked about America in being a violent country. Does not this defensive stand add to this violence?
Well, any act of defense could be categorized as violence if there is any type of conflict involved. But we think that there is some violence or conflict that's justified. For instance, a man who moves to protect himself from a violent attack, and though he uses a violence to dispel that attack, I think that he's completely justified in doing so. The right to self-defense has always been recognized in human society, and simply because we have a very violent situation on our hands here in this country doesn't mean that we have to forego this particular right.
What are your feelings about the new gun control law? Do you feel that this particular law is geared towards blacks?
We feel very definitely, particularly here in our local area, where we see how these vicious politicians who are known to be the open enemies of the black community, we see them out in the forefront of the forces calling for these gun controls. At the same time they're calling for gun controls, they're escalating the armament and the preparation of the police department and supplying them with all kinds of new and atrocious weapons, and we feel that this is aimed directly at the black community. There's no doubt in our mind that this is what this is all about. We're living in a time when black people are becoming more and more impatient. The philosophy of nonviolence has been murdered along with this prophet, Dr. Martin Luther King, and the power structure of this country knows that the black liberation struggle is turning into the alternative of violence. And so they're moving now to disarm the people before anything happens. And this is how they're thinking about that. And all of this ballyhoo about the gun control and gun legislation, we feel, is aimed at disarming the black liberation struggle and the allies of that struggle in the white community.
Would you define the defensive program of the Black Panthers in terms of guns? Do you promote vigilante parties?
We don't promote vigilante parties, and we don't approve of them. We feel that the primary problem confronting the black people today is the problem of getting organized. And the chief impediment to organization and all efforts to organize the black community comes from the activities of the police department. The police department functions like an occupying army in the black community, and it intimidates black people, it disturbs meetings, it prevents black people from having peaceful assemblies, and the very presence of the police with the history that they have concerning black people makes them an undesirable element in our community, and we seek to remove them from the community because they're constantly killing and brutalizing people, terrorizing people, and we feel that before much more progress can be made, that this particular point has to be dealt with. So we call for the immediate withdrawal of the white racist policemen from our communities, and we call for enactment of the principle that those who police our community must live in our community. This is what we ask. We want the policemen who police our community to live in our communities. We want the community to control the policemen who police our communities. We feel that it's a form of community imperialism to have a police force occupying our community that is controlled by the white suburbs. This is an obnoxious situation, and we want it to end, and we feel that we're completely justified in picking up guns to use them in our defense against policemen who do things like, as you open your show, describing the Bobby Hutton scene.
Has the police department and the Black Panthers ever sat down at the same table and attempted to negotiate any of the problems?
There have been very minimal direct contacts, such as when we've had occasions to put on benefits and rallies, say like at the auditoriums, where security has to be discussed. But they prefer to do that behind closed doors, you see. And they want to meet with us behind closed doors, as they've done with a lot of other groups in the black community. Like, one of the main programs that the power structure has these days are coming into the communities and putting different groups of black people on these poverty programs and just buying them out if they agree to perform in a certain manner. And we've been approached by some of the flunkies of the power structure to see if we would be willing to accept some of their Uncle Tom money. But publicly, they try to pretend that the last thing they would do would be to condescend to talk with the Black Panthers. And this creates a situation that exposes them to a lot of people who feel that public officials and public servants should be open to all elements of the public. And they have an image of being very closed to everything in the black community, particularly the militants and so forth who speak out.
Mr. Cleaver, we'll begin accepting calls from our night call listeners. Our national telephone number is area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. You may call us collect. We welcome your conversation and your comments. And our local telephone number in New York is 866-5010. That's 866-5010. Tonight, we are discussing the Black Panthers and Black Power. Our guest calling in from Oakland, California, Mr. Eldridge Cleaver, the information minister of the Black Panther Party. We'll take our first call from Cleveland, Ohio. Mr. Roth is listening to Night Call over radio station WERE. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Yes. First of all, Mr. Cleaver, I'd like to congratulate you on your article in the last issue of Ramparts about the land question. I thought that article was overdue. But in the latest issue, the article about the Black Panthers ends with the sentence, and chances are, too, that the cops will go on steadily and inexorably trying to bust and, if necessary, kill every Panther in Oakland. Mr. Cleaver, what is going to be done to stop this police brutality and killing?
I think that if the people who are standing on the sidelines don't move to harness the police departments of this country, not just in Oakland, because this is something that's going on all over this country, that if the citizens don't move to bring the police under their control, then there would be no alternative to the black community waging a defensive war against the police. And I think this is a very likely possibility. I know that people are psychologically and materially prepared to do this because it's becoming a matter of life and death. For instance, since Bobby Hutton was murdered in Oakland on April the 6th, here in the Bay Area, there have been about four other shootings and killings of young black people, young black men, by police. And so that the last straw has already been placed on the camel's back. And unless these police departments are brought down to a level where they're acceptable to the community, there can be nothing but a reply to them in kind. And it seems that that's the way it's going to be.
Mr. Roth?
Yes?
Did you have another question?
Yeah, just one more. Like him to tell me a little bit about the Peace and Freedom Party, which the Black Panther Party is working with.
Yes, the Peace and Freedom Party is composed primarily of white people who have been disgusted by the two-party system, so-called, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, and the type of corrupt politics that they've been practicing since they were coming to existence. And so they've broken away from those two parties and formed a new third party, which seeks to align itself with the legitimate aspirations of the black community, with the anti-war movement in this country. It seeks to chart a new direction in national politics. And we felt that this was a positive sign coming out of the white community. And we saw no reason why we shouldn't work with them, because we share some of the same goals and attitudes toward the status quo.
Mr. Roth, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
This is Night Call in New York. Our guest tonight is Mr. Eldridge Cleaver calling in from Oakland, California. Mr. Cleaver, we're going to allow our stations a moment to identify themselves, and then we'll return. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Eldridge Cleaver after station identification. Black is a red-blooded American color. The black showed the color of his blood in places like Vietnam and Korea and every other all-American battleground since the Revolution. Every time his country calls for help, he hears. But we don't seem to hear him when he calls. If black and white would listen with their hearts, they could hear each other. That's what Night Call is all about. It lets people air their views man to man, color to color, live from phones anywhere in the country. A syringe full of junk bites into black and white skin with the same ruining surge, and a black mother cries over her child just like a white one does. The problems are the same. The characters just have different colors. Night Call's person-to-person nationwide radio hookup lets the black and the white tell it like it is. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Eldridge Cleaver about the Black Panthers and Black Power. Again, Del Shields.
And we'll accept our next call, Mr. Cleaver, from Memphis, Tennessee. Miss Thompson is listening to Night Call over WDIA. Welcome to Night Call.
Mr. Cleaver?
Yes, ma'am.
How are you? Who do you think we black people should support for president, or should we support anyone?
Yes, ma'am. I think you should support me for president, ma'am. I'm running for president on the Peace and Freedom Party ticket. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, yes. I'm a candidate for president. I'm running against Dick Gregory for the nomination.
Yes, I know Dick Gregory is running.
Yes, well, he, Dr. Spock, and Ms. Coretta King have been proposed as possible nominees on the Peace and Freedom Party ticket.
Uh-huh.
I think I have it sorted up.
Yes. Well, do you think you'll get rid of Reagan out in California?
If we can't get rid of Reagan, we can't survive.
Yeah, I know.
Our survival depends upon getting rid of racist politicians like him.
Yes, I know. And another question I want to ask you, Mr. Cleaver, do you think the people here in Memphis will do anything about this race? I live here in Memphis, and I know this is one of the racist towns in the United States. Do you think they'll do anything about it?
I think that if black people would get organized in such a way as to leave the racists no choice.
Yes, I know we have a very popular group here in Memphis called Invaders. Because they was up at Resurrection City.
We need a branch of the Black Panther Party in Memphis, you see?
Yes, they just began to get kind of organized.
Yeah, we need brothers down there who would be armed and willing and ready to kill and die for the liberation
right.
of black people.
That's right. And I think we should start right here in Memphis. In fact, I think all black people should participate in their own towns and their cities.
Because
we all can't be together in one particular city, we should all work together.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
Like you said, be willing to die.
Not only die, ma'am. See, we've always been dying. We've got to get into the frame of mind where we'd also be willing to kill.
Oh, that's right. Certainly. That's the most important thing.
Right on.
Well, thank you very much.
Nice talking to you.
Thank you for calling. This is Night Call in New York. We'll accept our next call from our local area. Mr. Washington is listening to Night Call over WLIB-FM. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Brother Cleveland?
Yes, sir.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. How you doing, brother?
I'm all right. I'd like to know, could you give me any information on Huey Newton's situation? Because everything as far as the news media has been shady, and I thought maybe whatever you could tell us, it would be beneficial. For those people that are interested.
Thanks for asking. Brother Huey Newton is on death row virtually in Alameda County Jail, and he's scheduled to come up for trial on the 15th day of this month. We were doing pretty good in organizing and mobilizing public opinion in his behalf by spreading the information about how that whole case came about and why the police wanted to murder him. And just how that came down, so that a lot of people, particularly here in the Bay Area, are aware of the facts of the case. They're aware of how the Oakland Police Department systematically moves to liquidate members of the Black Panther Party. And so there's a great public sympathy for Huey. At the same time, we're faced with the very vicious power structure in this area that, for example, you know, I was arrested and taken to prison, and a judge ordered me released on a writ of habeas corpus because of the adult authority, the parole department, was holding me for political purposes. Now, I was just served yesterday with the notice that I'm to appear at San Quentin State Prison this coming Monday, the 8th of July, to face a hearing on those same charges that the judge had released me on. So that we have information that the district attorney, J. Francis Coakley of Alameda County, is the one who engineered this action against me by the parole people. So that it's an example of how they are continually moving to suppress and to silence those who speak out for the black liberation struggle. And in this area, that means speaking out in defense of Huey P. Newton. And they're trying to destroy his support in the community.
I'd like to know, have you been in contact with, or have you talked to Dick Gregory since you have, you know, begun your campaign?
Well, I saw him out here right before he went to jail, you know, to start that time up in Washington.
Uh-huh.
And we had a little conference with him then. But that was, I guess, a couple months ago.
Well, I'd like to know, did he mention any reasons why he called off the boycott of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago? Because I remember it had received quite a bit of publicity, and then all of a sudden I read where it was called off, and you know, you start wondering about things. And now Dick Gregory has been very quiet, and now I'm trying to wonder why. You know, would there be a contest between you and him when, you know, probably I would think that, you know, it would be possible if you two could get together, you know, and form
some. Well, see, Dick Gregory issued a public statement as to why he called that off, and this was he didn't want to be involved in any provocative situation that might lead to violence, you see, because a few things had happened about the time that he called that off. Some, I don't know if it was an uprising or a shooting or something with the overtones of violence.
Uh-huh.
And he, along with Mayor Daley, this was during the time when the racist pig, Mayor Daley of Chicago, issued this order to shoot and kill black people if they're thought to be looting.
Right.
You know? And Dick Gregory said that he was cooperating, that he didn't want to have anything to do with any trouble, blah, blah, blah. It's just an example of the wishy-washy way that Dick has always moved in those matters. And this is one of the reasons I oppose his nomination for the Peace and Freedom Party, because I wouldn't want to see his politics and his modus operandi institutionalized.
I understand perfectly what you're talking about. Now, one last question. I would like to know, do you have any particular message for the black college students and potential students as far as things they could do to help to benefit the whole of Afro-America here in the United States?
Yes. I say to black college students and potential students that they should return with their hearts and their minds and their souls to the black community, to relate to the brothers and sisters who have not had the opportunities they've had, and to use their intelligence and their skills to help organize the black community for its survival, because we're faced now with the prospect of genocide on an international level by a very racist and inhuman power structure that, as it winds up its war in Vietnam, it turns to its second war, which is the war against black people right here in Babylon. So I say to college students and to all people who want to see a new world and a better world, that they should unite and join together to form the type of power block that can contest and defeat this racist power structure and put it in the garbage can of history where it belongs.
Thank you for calling, Mr. Washington.
Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum salam, brother.
Thank you so much. This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's our national telephone number. Remember, you may call collect if you wish to speak with Mr. Elrich Cleaver, the information minister of the Black Panther Party, who's calling in from Oakland, California. And our local telephone number is 866-5010. That's 866-5010. We'll take our next call from Mr. Grimshaw, who is listening to Night Call over KLIQ-FM in Portland, Oregon. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Shields. May I just state that I think realize that he feels that they have been wronged, and I believe in his case, where the police have wronged him, he should have some redress. But I wanted to ask him if he has read of the life of Gandhi.
Yes, I've read of the life of Gandhi. I read of the history of the Indian Revolution, liberation struggle, and Gandhi is one of the great figures in history, and I am aware of him.
And don't you believe that he did such a great deal more with his nonviolence?
It may be. He liberated his country to a great extent with the use of nonviolence. But he was dealing with people other than his racist Yankees that we're dealing with here. He was dealing with a minority of occupying forces, and we're dealing with the majority of very complacent people who surround us and have us dispersed throughout their population, and who have a tradition of murdering and treating us in a very brutal and violent fashion, and who don't seem to be able to recognize the handwriting on the wall and the times in which they live, and the fact that black people have suffered beyond any more tolerance of a continuation of these conditions. And those who urge us to use doctrines from other lands, doctrines that in effect leave us merciless before a very vicious enemy, we would say to them to take their nonviolence and go preach that nonviolence to the racist president of this country. Teach nonviolence to LBJ. Teach nonviolence to Chief Gaines, the number one pig in the Oakland Police Department. Teach nonviolence to the racist policemen all over this country who are murdering and killing black people. Don't come to the black community and teach the victims of this violence to be nonviolent. Teach the perpetrators of violence to be nonviolent, and then we can talk about it.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I will do so wherever I can to all of the people you name and urge that right now. But I still believe that with an attitude of your violence to beget violence, to go against the violence that you say that has happened already, you'll do nothing but stir more trouble.
You're saying that if we try to defend ourselves against people who try to murder us, this will make them murder us that much faster?
No, secure support of people also who are sympathetic with you.
People who are sympathetic with us will stop being sympathetic if we try to keep people from killing us.
I don't know that those things happen. At least they don't in Portland, Oregon.
I think that in Portland, Oregon, black people have been killed. I know that there have been several uprisings of black people that
have
been in the news.
There has been one that I know of.
Are you a black man?
No, sir.
You're a white man?
Yes.
Why don't you go down into the black community in Portland, Oregon, and ask the people there if they're satisfied with the conditions under which they live?
Well, I have several good friends, and they are not satisfied because they are staying in an area where their rents are a little lower, but we have a very good, we get along very well.
Well, I don't know what you mean by getting along very well, but I know there's not a black man in America, including all the most obsequious bootlickers in Uncle Tom's.
Well, I can't see. You're calling people who are friends of mine names, which they are.
No, I'm not calling, wait a minute. I'm not calling your friends names. I'm telling you that all black people in this country recognize that they are living under a subjugated condition, that they are colonized people.
I grant you.
Mr. Grimshaw and Mr. Cleaver, we're sorry.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you so very much for calling, sir. Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network. We'll return to Mr. Cleaver after station identification.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Eldridge Cleaver after station identification. In our city and state, and all across the United States, people are talking about trouble, black and white trouble. Some call it racial tension, or see poverty as the real problem, or say law and order has given way to anarchy in our streets. Most people agree, at least, that there is a crisis. And we are a people with many unanswered questions. This station believes you deserve to ask your own questions and get some answers, or at least opinions, from people who should know what they're talking about. So we bring you Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show where you ask your questions and express your opinions to leaders such as John Lindsay, Ralph Abernathy, John Gardner, Stokely Carmichael, and Sergeant Shriver. Night Call, the new nationwide radio forum on important issues facing you and the rest of the nation. Night Call, each weeknight. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Eldridge Cleaver about the Black Panthers and Black Power. Again, Del Shields.
And welcome to the stations of the Night Call Network who join us for the second half hour. And tonight, it's the Black Panthers and the Black Power, and calling in from Oakland, California's Mr. Eldridge Cleaver, who is on the line. And we'll take our next call from Syracuse, New York. Mr. Karp is listening to Night Call over WAER-FM. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Mr. Cleaver, I thought your book was great, and first of all, I wanted to ask you, could you give me sort of a statement of purpose for the Black Panther Party?
A statement of purpose for the Black Panther Party?
Yes.
We want to organize the black people in America, all the way across this country, in a way that they will be prepared to defend themselves against the aggression of the power structure, the racism of this country, and also to be in a position to inflict a political consequence upon this country if we are not given the things we need in order to live a good life and to survive. We feel that black people do not have power based on financial resources, on control of industry or control of land, other economic basis for this power. And we feel that the only power that black people really have available to them is the power to destroy, the power to upset the equilibrium of this country by moving out of the position that we're in. Simply by moving for our liberation, by standing up. You know, when you see black people growing their hair in what we call the natural style,
natural.
The mere fact of changing the identity that we've been given by the racist mystique of this country causes repercussions throughout the country, you see?
Yes.
So we feel that when we organize black people into a posture that confronts the power structure with an implacable demand that we're not going to go along with the program that they have cut out for us, that we're not going to cooperate with them in corralling us and in suppressing us, that we're not going to cooperate with their police department when they come in and try and keep us passive and cowed, that we're not going to cooperate with the legislation that they passed against us or with the legislation that they filibuster against, that we're not going to be a willing slave for them any longer. By putting black people in this posture and by organizing that posture nationally and internationally when we get into that position, then we feel that we'll be able to force this country to give us the things that we need to live a good life.
And how would you recommend that the typical white student help you guys?
Well, I think that a white person who was interested in the welfare of mankind should take a good look at what's going on in this country. And this is what's really happening, that the white students in this country, young white people, have already taken a look at what's going on, and they don't like it. So I say that they should organize themselves into machinery that would be capable of dealing with the revolution, what we call the white mother country. We feel that we have black people here who are colonized by the white people. So we refer to that as the relationship between the black colony and the white mother country. So we feel that we need to wage a national liberation struggle in the black colony and a revolution in the white mother country. And we feel that white, young white people who are interested in doing this should organize themselves in a fashion to deal with the politics and the economics and the social practices in this country, and to be prepared to work with those elements in the black community who understand this process and who are willing to work with them. And we think that with this type of combination, this type of coalition, we will have the strength to bring about the revolutionary changes that this country must have if there's going to be a future for America or mankind.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Our next call, sir, will come from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Mr. Sam Davis is listening to Night Call over WAAAFM. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'd just like to make a couple of points to you, sir. One thing is that I think it's by a very clever rearrangement and matter of semantics and rearrangement of words that you justify your cause as being a defensive maneuver. And what I think is that you're considering the very presence of a white mother country, as you call it, sufficient reason for the black community to take an offensive stance with your Black Panther Party. The second point is, let's get pragmatic for a minute. If you want to talk violence, let's leave the part of racism out of it for a minute, all right?
Well, you can do that, you see, but I can't do that because...
Well, all right, let's just talk violence a minute.
Well,
let's get pragmatic about the question.
I'll listen to what you have to say.
You talk about revolutionary changes. Let's get down to something. Let's see if your argument makes any sense, really. All right, first of all, you've got to consider, if you talk about violence, what's the percentage of population Negro in the United States? And you've got to consider that you are outnumbered almost by about 10 to 1. All right, you've also got to consider how many weapons factories in the United States are Negro-controlled, how many arms factories, how many bullet factories, how many food production outlets do you control, how many farm development centers, how many grocery store chains, do you own the trucking companies to get your men and machines from place to place, supposing a revolution were to take place, do you own any airlines for fast communications, how many communication systems does the black, is black controlled? And my last point I'd like to make, after this seems to already point out the illogic in your position, the last point I'd like to make is you are asking black people to organize, and you said it yourself tonight, you want black people to be willing to die for something. So
I also said kill, didn't I?
Kill and die.
That's right.
All right. Well, that's a tremendous responsibility. Two
it sure
things.
Is.
You're asking them to kill
and die. Well, let me ask you a question, sir.
It
are you a white man or a black man?
I'm a white man, sir.
I thought so. Well, now, let me tell you this. You can count off your statistics, you know, about everything that you can control. And if it was so, if you had it so uptight, then you shouldn't even be concerned about what black people can do in this country, you see? But we know that with all of your numbers and with all of your material superiority and with all these things that you have going for you, you're in big trouble all over the planet Earth. You dig it? We know that. And we don't look upon this situation as being just something confined to the geographical boundaries of the United States on the North American continent. We look upon this in a worldwide context, and in the worldwide context, you are in very much of the minority, and we are with the majority. So you don't just have 20 million black people to deal with. You have 700 million Chinese to deal with. You have 300 million Africans to deal with. You have unnumbered millions and millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of mad black, brown, red, and yellow people to deal with. And you know that.
As
you
are tight.
And we,
point,
wait just a minute, let me finish. You talk and I let you talk and you let me talk, dig it? We don't care about your atomic bombs. We don't care about your tanks and your guns and how many guns you have. Because when the push comes to the shove, we will do the same thing that the Viet Cong is doing in Vietnam. We will lay in wait and we will take your guns from you and we will use your guns against you. Your plants and your factories are right here in our neighborhoods. You put them there because you didn't want them in your own neighborhood because they, you know, give out that smoke and those foul smells. These things are here and we will move against those things, you dig it, and disrupt the economy of this country and force you to just destroy all of your liberties and all the beautiful things that you love. Because in order to suppress the 20 million black people in this country, you are going to have to destroy this country. And we say that if we can't have freedom here, then let it be destroyed, because you don't deserve it. If we can't be free, then you don't deserve to even talk of freedom. And your numbers and all of that, it don't move nobody but you. And you're moving in the fog and ain't nobody digging it but you.
I'd just like to make one more point, sir, please. I'd like to say you're asking people to kill and die for a cause. Well, it seems to me that no one ever mentioned the fact No one ever mentioned that, even brought it in until you just did, that the white people in the United States were trying to suppress the black people that you call. I don't think that's true.
You don't think white people are trying to suppress black people?
What?
You don't think that white people are trying to suppress black people?
They may be trying to suppress you. They're not trying to suppress black people. That's another thing. What percentage of the Negro population and all these millions of people that you talk about are sympathetic with your cause?
I think that they're all sympathetic.
It seems to me that before you can ask people to kill, take other lives, and be willing to give their lives up, that you're going to have to at least come up with a logical, viable cause for them to die and kill for. I don't think you've got
it. I think that we already have that cause.
I don't think you do.
I know you don't.
Thank you for calling, sir. Thank you for calling.
Yes, sir.
This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311. Our national telephone number again is area code 212-749-3311. Our local telephone number in New York is 866-5010. That's 866-5010. Remember, if you're calling outside of New York, you may call collect. Mr. Cleaver, we'll take a call from California. Mr. Jim Feeney is listening to Night Call over KERS-FM in Sacramento. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Hello, Aldridge. I guess you're familiar with KPFA. Station down there, and I've read your articles in Ramparts magazine. Very excellent. And I also heard the broadcast on the Peace and Freedom Party convention. And since the Black Panthers and the Peace and Freedom Party seem to be forming a coalition, I just wondered what you thought of the quite revolutionary aims of the Peace and Freedom Party, which is to try to get into power, to abolish politics, to something about a five-year moratorium on so-called progress, and all these things that they brought up. And the reason I'm asking this question, Eldridge, is I'm a white man. I'll answer that question ahead of time. But I just wonder how much of the so-called racial disorders, racial problem, in quotes, is actually racial, and how much of it, in your estimation, is economic?
Well, I think that, you see, the entire philosophy of white supremacy and the corollary philosophy of black inferiority and the inferiority of all people who are non-white was something that was developed.
I can't hear you very well.
Pardon?
Speak a little bit louder.
Okay. Yeah. I'm saying that this racism, you know, the philosophy of white supremacy.
Yeah.
The whole concept of all non-white people being inferior and being the servants of white people is something that was developed after whites came out of Europe and began to go around the world and they found all these people who didn't have the weapons that they had, and who they were able to...
They had the technological superiority, yeah.
Beg your pardon?
They had technological superiority.
Well, they didn't have technological superiority.
Yeah.
They had a type of unethical savagery that would... for instance, when the white man came to the America here, and he encountered the Indian here, the red man here.
Yeah.
Well, the red man tried to help him to survive. You know, they teach you that in schools.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
About how the pioneers were starving and all that. The settlers were starving and the red men helped them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was just a difference in the type of background that the people came from, a background that enabled them to prey on their fellow man.
I don't agree with that. I think I mean, you may be right here, but I think
Mr. Feeney and Mr. Cleaver,
okay.
We're going to ask you to hold for just a moment, and we're going to allow our stations to identify themselves, and then we'll come right back.
Fine.
You may stay on the line. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Eldridge Cleaver after station identification. Listen to the voices of Night Call.
The prophet Isaiah says, your cities are burning because there is injustice in your land. and the Lord will not hear you because your hands are full of blood. Now, I will interpret that to say the United States is on fire, its cities are burning because there's injustice in the land, and the Lord above will not hear the cries of people like Lyndon Baines Johnson because his hands are full of blood.
Stokely Carmichael quotes the Bible in support of militancy. And a National Guard commander says ballots, not bullets, are the best ammunition.
I think you have a tremendous power in the democracy of the ballot box. It's much stronger than bullets. You do have the ballot box, which is far stronger than any sort of suppression.
Night Call, the new nationwide call-in show on vital issues, each weeknight on this station. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Eldridge Cleaver about the Black Panthers and Black Power. Again, Del Shields.
And our caller on the line is Mr. Jim Feeney, listening to Night Call over KERS-FM in Sacramento, California, and in Oakland, California, calling in is our guest, Mr. Eldridge Cleaver. Gentlemen, the microphone is yours again.
I can't hear you again.
Could you speak up, Mr.
Is
Cleaver?
Wrong with these telephones?
No, just speak up a little bit louder.
Is that better?
That's fine.
Okay. See, it's very important that people understand the relationship or the fact that there is a distinction between the economics of the situation and the racism of the situation.
Yeah, that's what I'm interested in, yeah.
Historically, we could say that the economics were primary and that the racist philosophies that were developed later on were developed to justify the whole process of exploitation of the non-white peoples. As the Europeans began to colonize them in Asia and Africa, Latin America, and so forth, they developed this philosophy to justify what they were doing to these people only after they started doing it, you see?
Mm-hmm.
And now that has evolved into the very fabric of all the ideas and the whole... everything about this country has been permeated by this philosophy in order to justify the elaboration of the exploitation. And when people encounter this, they encounter a mixture of the economic exploitation and the racism. They run into a white businessman who's exploiting them, or a white landlord who's charging them high prices for rent. And so that the economics and the racism go hand in hand, and it's very hard to separate them. And people who are confronting this situation daily and who haven't had time to do elaborate studies of the situation, they don't have time to try and distinguish between the economics and the racism. They see the white businessmen exploiting them, and that's good enough, and they can move on that.
Mm-hmm. So, well, that kind of modifies my views. I had it, you know, say maybe 5% really racial, but, you know, and the rest economic.
But it's a mixture of the two. You see, they work hand in hand. The philosophies that a given economy will develop to justify its practices are there to support the economic facts of life, you see?
Justify so the white conscience. No,
it just depends on what society you're in. There will always be a philosophy that sort of sanctifies the economic practices that are going on.
Yeah, like in Protestant America, the slaves, the black slave had his family life broken up, whereas in the Catholic countries where slavery was practiced, that didn't happen, and so the family unit remained.
Yes, those things stand out.
Yeah.
Thank you for calling,
well,
sir.
You modified my views. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. This is Night Call in New York, and we'll take our next call from Baltimore, Maryland. Mrs. Siegel is listening to Night Call over WAMU-FM in Washington. Welcome to Night Call.
Thank you, Mr. Shields. Mr. Cleaver, if you're so unhappy with America, why don't you go back to Africa if this nation is so unsatisfactory to you?
I think that after we send you back to Europe, we might go back to Africa.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, and let me say one more thing, sir. That you say that genocide is being committed against the black people. how many, the crime rate amongst the Negro is the highest in the, as far as the United States is concerned. And I say that the black people are committing genocide against the white people.
Well, you can say that, you know, if you want to, but I say that the crime rate, or what you call the crime rate, is not nearly high enough. Black people are put into a position where they either have to go out and beg you white people for things to survive, or they have to go out and take it. So I say that if they're not able to get it in any other way, that they should push the crime rate to the high heavens and just take all everything you got, because you don't deserve it, because you have an anti-human attitude towards other people.
I do not have an anti-human attitude.
Well,
and I say, sir, that if anyone wants to work, they can work. You're advocating
you know
violence.
Millions and millions of people in this country who want to work and who can't find jobs.
There's plenty of jobs that are available.
Well, why don't you go down to one of the unemployment offices, you know, and tell those people who stand in those lines that there are plenty of jobs available. Why don't you do that?
Well, in Baltimore here, the jobs are available, but the help, we cannot get any help. And I think that you're violent. The way you advocate violence is a terrible thing, and it's certainly not going to, you're polarizing the situation. You're not bringing white people and black people together.
Well, we want to bring people together who have their heads together. And it wouldn't be any good to bring people together who have their heads so untogether, you know?
Well, sir, I'm going to hang up, but it's the first time that I've had the opportunity of talking to a criminal. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you for calling. Mr. Cleaver,
yes.
Does the Black Panther Party accept or welcome the help of white people?
Yes, we work with white people all the time. We have good relations with a lot of white people. We have a coalition, a formal political coalition with the Peace and Freedom Party, which is, as I said earlier, composed of white people. We work with different groups on the campuses. And out here where the white people have had a chance to see us in action and see how we work and who know what we're involved in and what our aims are, they like us, you see? This is distinguished from the racists in the power structure who want to keep people divided, who don't want to see white people and black people work together on anything that's seriously contesting the status quo. They're the ones who spread the racism through their control of the mass media and try to spread the idea that the Black Panther Party is some type of irresponsible gang of hoodlums whose only ambition is to go out and kill and murder and invade the suburbs and all that madness, you see. But the white people who are here in this area work with us, and we do a very good job, and there's no problem in that area. That's not our problem comes from the racists who fear the development on a national scale of a working coalition between black people and white people who want to move to change this country. This is what they fear, and this is why they move to suppress all tendencies and all manifestations of political expression that are moving in that direction. And so that any white person with any sense who wants to do something to bring about a better world has never had a hard time in talking to black people or relating to black people, because black people have been so down on hatred. They have been so much the victims of racism and of racial hatred, that it's almost impossible for a black person to really become a racist as white people find it easy to become. And this is not one of our problems.
We'll accept another call, Mr. Cleaver. This time, Mr. Martin from Seattle, Washington, is listening to Night Call over KUOW-FM. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Good evening, Mr. Shields.
Good
Mr.
evening.
Cleaver,
yes, sir.
Just curious, is it possible then, just going by your last statement then, that the white and the black can live together? And this is the first part, and then the second part, what do you mean when you say black?
Okay, I'll take the first part. I think that if you're speaking in ultimate terms, will it be ultimately possible for black people and white people to live together? I think that it will be up to white people, because black people are willing to, live side by side with other people. But the question is this: how are we to move to survive against a hostile population that on the one hand sends in a few of its numbers to talk nonviolence to us and to talk brotherhood to us and to talk about living together, while on the other hand, the very working and functioning of the system daily is grinding black people down and keeping them down. And while other people's standard of living is going up, ours is falling and standing still. I mean, it's very difficult for us to be concerned about brotherhood and all of these things when we see the operation of this country destroying us. Now, will you repeat your other question?
No, I was just curious. Just what do you mean when you talk about black?
Black?
In other words, is black to you, is this a descendant from Africa? Or
we
is it,
speak of the black, the people,
or is this everyone
country
that is non-white?
Listen, we use, you know how they say that if you have one drop of black blood in you, that you're not white? You know how the white people used to run around saying that? When they were classifying the various people as not belonging to their superior group? Well, we have people in our group who run from those who could pass for white, you know?
Right.
Like Adam Clayton Powell, who could very well be a white man, or Senator Brooks, you know? On down to brothers and sisters who are pure black and who've never had their bloodlines corrupted. So that we encompass all of this by a recognition of the basic principle that we are the descendants of the people who were brought here from the motherland, from the fatherland of Africa.
Well, that's what I mean. In other words, would you include someone like a Mexican-American or an Indian, such as myself, as black? Or do you say black is a descendant from Africa?
Yes, we do use that as a descendant of Africa, because Africa is the home of the black man.
I noticed that
the Mexican people these days refer to themselves as brown people, and I've heard Indian people refer to themselves as the red man.
Right, but I mean, you use the simile then about the your brothers in China.
Yes.
But, and yet they're not black.
No, they're not. I didn't say my black brothers in China either, did I?
No, that's right.
I said my brothers in China.
Okay.
So they'll be my yellow brothers if you want me to get specific.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for calling, sir. Mr. Cleaver, we've come just about to the close this evening. And
has an hour gone by that fast, man?
Yes, it has, just about.
I was wondering where I was going to find things to say for an hour.
I just wanted to ask one question in terms of the defensive measures of the Black Panther Party. If the Black Panther Party was to decide to forego the idea of defensive measures, do you think that there would be more acceptance of the party?
More acceptable to the party, or
more acceptance of the party?
Yes, I think that a lot of people would, you know, greet that as a good sign, you know. But I think it would be a great disservice to black people and to mankind, because if we would abandon our position of calling for a cessation of the brutality and terror against black people, then we would in effect be endorsing evil. And we say that it's the duty of people to stand up and to implacably oppose all manifestations of inhuman behavior, particularly by
Mr.
government.
Cleaver, thank you so much for being with us tonight
on
Night Call.
All right.
This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, President H.W. Glasson of the National Rifle Association will answer your questions about gun laws and gun deaths. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church. Presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, and National Urban Coalition.